This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at jwright929 ESPN. As always, you can listen on your radio dialed 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But you can stay up to date anytime, anywhere, any place with the Odyssey app. All you have to do is download the Odyssey app. It's free to download. It's free to listen. Subscribe to 92.9 FM ESPN. You can stay up with all the content here from the station. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company today, as he is each and every Wednesday on the program. He, of course, writes about college football and college basketball for CBS Sports. He's on Twitter at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, good day, Jeffrey. You look a little red slash tan. You've been playing some golf? You've been sneaking out there to get nine in?
I have not. We've had decent sunshine, but I feel like I haven't even really gone outside. No.
Okay. Well, no. You might need to get your blood.
I think it's just the amount of just like sports straight to the veins. Like, you know what I mean? Like I'm all in. Like we were discussing last week whether or not this is the best time of the year. The last 2 weeks have confirmed for me, like, this is awesome.
It is, but I have noticed how little time I've been spending outside as well.
Yeah.
And I've made a tea time for Sunday afternoon because I'm like, I got to get outside. Like the days of good weather are fleeting. And, you know, I got to go play some golf.
It's been perfect for us. I don't know how it is for you right now, but it has been absolutely perfect. I mean, we're in like the mid to high 70s, like that light breeze. It's as good as it gets right now. All right, let's tell everybody what we got coming up on the program. Of course, set the viewing schedule for the weekend. We will have the tasting menu to start. Eric Hastein going to join us here in about 30 minutes or so. We'll talk Grizzlies with Eric when he joins us. I got to tell you, Cobb, it wasn't the preseason for Eric on Monday night. I mean, he was ready to go, and I'm going to have to give him the compliments. His call, even night one, he was in midseason form already.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I watched the game via league pass from the Mavs.com stream, which was sort of a strange configuration there. I didn't listen to Hassle Time, but man, it was just great to see him back out there. Obviously, like my heart like skipped several beats when Ja stepped on the basketball, and kind of made me think that the Ja threes might need to be high tops.
Yeah. Is this an old man take from both of us? I wore low top cleats in football and baseball, but I was always a high top guy I feel like in basketball, like I wanted that extra ankle support.
Well, there weren't a lot of good low top sneakers on the market in the early to mid 2000s that I can recall. And
the two that I remember that were popular were the Nike three stripe. I'm begging for the Adidas three stripe, like kind of old school one. And then the Iversons. Iversons were low top or low cut. Right.
I always just tried to get either basketball shoes or cleats that like matched the color scheme of whatever team I was playing on. And then you look back at the basketball team pictures from the early to mid 2000s and you're like, wow, we were really all in on the like baggy shorts, well below the knees phase. And it's unfortunate that we got caught up in because those photos do not age well.
The wide sleeves, I do not think that first decade of the 2000s, I don't think that's going to age well.
And then I also was in on the tail end of the phase where you hooked the back of your baseball pants around your cleats to where your pants were coming down all the way over your shoes in baseball.
Did you ever do the move, take the elastic out? See, yeah. I didn't hook it to the back of my cleats, but we would take the elastic out so that we could drape it over like Bonds did.
Well, that's our pants were almost made like that. They didn't have the cuffs at the bottom, you know? And so that's another one where I look back and I'm like, wow. Among the other many issues with my athletic career, the fashion was...
Yeah, that's the only thing that kept us. There's no question. Like, we would have been like perennial all-stars, if not for really terrible fashion sense.
Exactly.
So we will talk with Eric here in about 30 minutes or so. We'll get into the list. We will also keep you up to date on everything that is going with the South Florida-Memphis game. Connor writes in that he'd put his pants on his spikes to stretch them out. Again, I basically would get my pants a size too big and I'd take the elastic out.
Oh, the other thing I would do, I was so obsessed with getting the brim of my cap completely flat that I would come home and put it underneath.
Oh yeah.
My 2004 ESPN College Football Almanac, which was like the heaviest book that I owned. And it just so the bill would be as flat across as humanly possible.
So I have Rory McIlroy disease. If you have a really small head, flat bills do not fit you. And remember when Nike was trying to put Rory in flat bills and they always just looked weird? It was the same thing with me. Like even when like we would get the hats and then flat bills became a thing, it's like it never looked right on me. But for the most part, it's like it didn't really matter because I was a catcher. So it didn't really matter except pictures. So picture day, like you always, and like that's the thing. It's like if you're doing like the team, like the only time anyone ever looks at the team is like the team photo. It's like I just always, my hat always just looks so stupid. I could not wear a flat bill.
I've still got a photo from high school of me in the outfield where it was like a staged photo where we were just taking ins and outs. So we had a photographer out there to take action shots or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And my hat just looks. It's just like the bill is so elongated because it was just as flat as could possibly.
It looked like a Disney like Donald Duck or Goofy hat. Yeah.
Man, it's just so many cringeworthy moments.
All right, so let's start with Thursday. So tonight we have, I mean, at least on paper, it's an interesting NFL game. We've got Seahawks and we've got Niners. The Niners come in at 2-3. It's this weird thing where they've clearly been disappointing, but it also doesn't feel like anyone in the NFC is going to like run away and hide. And it also feels like, despite being 2-3, if they win tonight, they're still in front in the division. And you presume they're going to get healthier, although I still have my doubts. When you have to go to Germany, your running back has to go to Germany to get whatever procedure done.
Right.
Like that implies that there are a lot of doctors in America that didn't really say what you wanted to hear, so you had to go to Germany. I mean, I know I think Kobe did it. I want to say maybe Peyton did it at one time, went over to Germany.
Chandler Parsons went overseas.
That worked. that came back. That worked. But we also have the two AL games tonight. So we have Detroit trying to put away the Guardians. And then we have the Yankees trying to put away the Royals. And College-wise, I mean, right, the best game, I think, is Coastal JMU because we've gotten our first full dose of midweek CUSA. Kyle, I feel like every time I watch CUSA, like every year, it just gets progressively worse.
Ooh, it's bad. You can see why these teams are eager to jump if the Mountain West comes a-calling. Although, shoot, I mean, they're not as eager as you might have thought they'd be. But yeah, it's the Conference USA stuff has been pretty gross. I am a fan of JMU Coastal just for the fact that it's a couple of 4-1 teams. So, like, you do have a couple of conference title contenders there. And then Seahawks 49ers. Like, you got a couple of really interesting Memphis storylines there. I mean, we got Kenneth Walker III against quasi-Memphis native Jawan Jennings, who's now the 49ers' leading receiver in terms of yards. So, I don't know if you know this, but Jawan actually lived in Memphis for, like, a good chunk of middle school and then, like, into his freshman year. So, I mean,
I did not know that.
Yeah, so he, you know, like if you go to his 24/7 sports recruiting profile, he played his last few years of high school ball in Murfreesboro, but he was actually on the freshman team at Germantown High that won the freshman league, the freshman city league or county league or whatever it is, and he was like throwing down dunks as a freshman in high school in the Memphis area. So yeah, Kenneth Walker III versus Jawan Jennings, a little Memphis on Memphis there tonight. So I'm excited for that.
I presume you covered Jawan's recruitment.
I didn't cover his recruitment, but I did a very in-depth feature. If you recall when he got kicked off the team for dog cussing Vanderbilt on a Instagram Live or Periscope or whatever it was at the time. The next season after Jeremy Pruitt got the job, Philip Fulmer went to bat for Jawan, got him back on the team. He ends up having a huge day when they beat Auburn. And, you know, kind of that season helped solidify him as an NFL prospect, even though, I mean, he was still, I think, only a 7th-round pick. But anyway, I did this big feature on Jawan and, like, his path to redemption. And that's where I kind of learned the whole Memphis backstory. So, yeah, that was, like, a very, like, important time in his life because, you know, that's where it was in the 901 where he kind of began to blossom into a college prospect.
A freshman that can dunk is just something that's very difficult to wrap your mind around.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then Kenneth Walker III is crazy. Like, I don't even really remember him being all that big of a prospect, even though I'm sure he was rushing for, you know, crazy numbers at Arlington.
I was wondering this because something's never made sense to me. With all due respect to all involved, I don't understand how Arlington is not better than they are in football. It's a huge school. Like, it just makes no sense to me. I believe he was a 2-star prospect because he started at Wake, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did.
And then also, I don't feel like it's super fun to be a running back in that offense, the slow mesh, because, like, in reality, all it's designed is, like, you do the slow mesh so the safeties have to come up so I can just take deep shots over the top. That's never struck me as, like, a fun offense to be a running back in. And then, obviously, when he gets to Michigan State, they tailor the entire offense around him, and he's gone on to have the career that he has. I just wonder, like, if he's, like, just the classic example of just, like, just consistently overlooked, but probably never should have been.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the Michigan State flash in the pan season of 2021, Kenneth Walker carried them to, what was it, the Sugar Bowl? I mean, that was the high water mark of
I want to say it was the Peach Bowl. I think they played that Peach Bowl against Pitt.
Yeah, it was the Peach Bowl. Yeah.
It was the Peach Bowl against Pitt with, like, that was, like, one of the first, like, real big opt-out bowls, like, of a New Year's Six bowls. Like, it was, like, third-team quarterback against third-team quarterback.
Yeah, it was. So we were actually in Atlanta at that time. And so, yeah, it was. You're right. It was the Peach Bowl. But, yeah, Kenneth Walker III gets in the right system. One of the great success stories of the portal, because if he doesn't leave Wake Forest, he's not in the NFL right now. So, you know, that's one that is absolutely a success story of the transfer portal.
Because it's like, even when Kenneth's in the NFL, you're like, oh, he's fast. And it's like, I just don't understand how he got overlooked. Because at 247, he was 112th prospect in the state, 229 nationally as a running back. Like, man, that one baffles me. All right, so then we go to Friday. I will say this. I'm glad that this baseball game is on Friday and not Saturday or Sunday, because I have found, despite being a big baseball fan, baseball just gets swallowed up for me on football days. But I absolutely love this Padres-Dodgers series.
Yes.
Because it has everything that I love in sports. It's two really even teams. They can't stand each other. The Padres are that team that everything they do irritates the Dodgers. And then you obviously have like the San Diego versus LA fan base element. You've got my guy Tom DeLonge singing all the small things, you know, during the seventh inning, going around the stadium. Like, that's been electric. Both stadiums have looked great. Petco's been amazing. I am so fired up for that baseball game, and I'm glad that it's on Friday, not Saturday or Sunday. The only thing that scares me is I just don't want another game like last night where someone wins 8-0.
That's true, yeah. But it's Darvish versus Yamamoto. Like, there's no way somebody's jumping out to a 5-0 lead in two innings like we saw last night. That is another thing I love about the baseball playoffs is the games actually start at reasonable times. So this is an 8:00 Eastern, 7:00 Central first pitch. It'll probably be over by the time Utah Arizona State starts, which is great. You don't even have to like divide your attention. Not sure I'm going to make it to the end of Utah Arizona State, but I definitely wouldn't make it to the end of a baseball game if it started at 9:30 Central. So I love that the MLB actually schedules games in time slots that like people in the Central and Eastern time zones can make it to the end.
Yeah, you'd asked me last week, how was I doing on the late night games? Hand up. When it was 30, what did it get?
35 to 10.
I think I moved from the den and put it on in my room.
That's what it's like. You're lying to yourself. You're like, yeah, I'll watch.
Yeah, but you just know, like, as soon as you go horizontal, it's over. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have like money line or anything. I just had Cal plus 10.5. And it's like, all right, I guess it's conceivable they lose. But like the thought of them, I think when Cam threw the pick, which is like, we got the full Cam Ward experience in like 15 minutes of football. Because you go from seeing like the worst interception you've seen all year, non-Will Levis division, to some of the most unbelievable quarterback play we've seen all year. I mean, he was just on fire, making unbelievable throw after unbelievable throw. But like, I think I saw them make it 35-18, and I was like, all right. And I didn't make it. I had to watch the rest of the morning.
Buy or sell, Cam Ward is the closest thing in this NFL quarterback class to Jaden Daniels, even more so than Jalen Milroe.
So if the comp is Milroe or Ward to Jaden, I would definitely agree with you. I'd buy that. I think the thing that people just don't realize, Jaden's pretty tall. I mean, Jaden's like 6'3", 6'4", and Cam is very athletic, but I don't think Cam straight line can run. Like, Jaden is shifty and fast. I think Cam's more quick. I can buy that. Is there one quarterback in this draft that you would like? Because this is all I care about. Although the Giants may not be as bad as I think, but I still think we're not a playoff team, and so like we're going to have that decision of like, do you go 7-10, 8-9, miss the playoffs, and then just kill your draft stock? It feels like at this point you made the decision whether or not it's right or wrong. You just made the decision. You're moving on from Daniel Jones. I don't know if there's a quarterback that I love. The one that I think I'm the highest on is Quinn, but I still can't get out of my head, like we've talked about it. If you've been hurt every year in college and your senior year of high school, I find it hard to believe that you're just going to go and have this healthy NFL career. And I could be proven wrong, but like that would give me pause for concern.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people are going to be after, well, who's the next Jaden Daniels? Can we find the next Jaden Daniels in this class?
That's what we do.
Jaden Daniels. Yeah, right. And to me, it's Cam Ward. Now, the big difference right now, though, between Cam Ward and Jaden Daniels is that in all of last season, while winning the Heisman Trophy, Jaden Daniels threw 4 interceptions all season. Cam Ward has already thrown 5, and we're not even halfway.
I think 4 have been in the last week, right? 2 weeks?
Yeah, he's got the whoopsie-daisy thing going on. So that's the one issue for me where it's like, that's the only thing really holding Cam Ward back. Like, I agree. Like, if you put Cam Ward and Jaden Daniels on the line and had them run a 100-yard dash. Like, I think Jaden Daniels is going to win that 100-yard dash. But in terms of the way that Jaden Daniels can layer the football and throw to all three levels of the field, Cam Ward has that. And Jalen Milroe is still kind of developing that. I think he's improving in that regard. You know, he's getting a little better at some of the over-the-middle, mid-range type of throws. But Cam Ward has pretty much all the throws. And if he can eliminate some of the mistakes, like, I think his stock is going to keep rising.
My biggest problem with Milroe, and this is probably a me thing, and it may be dumb, but I'm fine with it. I hate his throwing motion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't. It's like, I just can't believe in it. It's like the guy. It's the shooter who doesn't have a pretty stroke. It's like, and it was like, well, Sean Marion. It's like, you've named one. Like, congratulations, you found the one guy.
Yeah, no, it's not pretty, but maybe he can get some of that coached out of him. And he's just now, Jalen Milroe is just now under the tutelage of an actual good quarterback's coach. Because he was kind of an afterthought his first year at Alabama. Then last year they brought in Tommy Reese. I don't think he was coached up very well last year. He's finally got Kalen DeBoer now. So, like, I'm not dismissing that Jalen Milroe can't continue to improve as a passer, but if I were trying to go find the next Jaden Daniels right now, I'd be looking at really hard at Cam Ward.
The two toughest scouts for me are Beck and Shador. Because if you want to make the case that Beck had the reputation at Georgia of freaking out, kind of being a head case, and part of his success last year was they had an easy schedule early, and so it allowed him to kind of ease into the process, build up some confidence, and then he also had, you know, at different times, Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers, but for most of the year, he had Brock, and so he has the safety blanket. I still am of the opinion not all the mistakes of the Georgia game were his fault. I think his receivers screwed up a good amount. But it's just it's such a difficult scout because he's playing at Georgia. He has the best players around him. He's got I know it's banged up, but there's, what, 130 quarterbacks that would take his offensive line in the country?
Right, but you're seeing a little bit of regression from Carson Beck due to the regression of Georgia.
Yeah.
I think as the team goes, so will Carson Beck. If you get Carson Beck into a system where he's got the most talented team, then I think he knows what to do in that situation. I don't think he alone is a difference maker, though, which is what Jaden Daniels is. That's what Cam Ward is. And I think it's what Jalen Milroe is, too, though you can certainly argue that with guys like Jeremy Bernard and Ryan Williams that, you know, he's kind of got the elite playmakers around him. But Carson Beck, to me, has regressed because the team around him has. And then you talk about Shador. My concern with him is just the arm strength. I think he's got pretty much everything else. He's not super elusive. He's not
elite. He's elusive enough, though.
Yeah, he's got enough of that box checked. Yeah, the arm strength. Like, can he make that across the hash, like, deep out type of throw against NFL corners? Like, that's... And I don't think we're going to get answers to that in the Big 12 because I look at Colorado's matchup with Kansas State this week. I don't know how K-State's going to match up with Colorado's receivers because it's not just Travis Hunter. I mean, there's Jimmy Horn and LaJonte Wester and Will Shepard, and I think that's a tough matchup for K-State secondary. So, like, I think from an intangible standpoint, Shador's got a lot of it. Like, he sees the field really, really well. So, yeah, like, I wouldn't burn a top 10 pick on Shador Sanders, but I do think he is an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, I've always thought Shador is the most polished, like, in terms of technique, footwork, everything. Like, I think he's the most polished. I have the same thing about arm strength, where I don't know that he doesn't have enough arm strength, but I'm not convinced that he for sure does. So I'm with you on that. But he's also a tough scout because, like, their offensive line's so bad. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I do think, though, they have finally acknowledged they're bad up front, and they're starting to get the ball out of his hand a lot quicker, and I think that has helped them significantly. Like, I think that's part of their looking better on offense, is instead of Shador dropping back, trying to hit big shots with a bad offensive line, like, they don't have the protection for that, so they're avoiding that. All right,
he's checking it down more often.
Let's get to Saturday. Is there anything in the early window that interests you?
Well, only for this reason will I say Georgia Tech, North Carolina. UNC defensive coordinator Jeff Collins against his old team. And rightfully so, North Carolina's defense continues to be under heavy scrutiny because they really just can't stop anybody. Now you got a game against your old squad that's sitting there at 4-2 that's really been a whole lot better than they let you go. So in a really weak watered down noon window, 11 a.m. Central window, yeah, Georgia Tech, North Carolina is kind of interesting to me for that reason.
Okay. I wish I had a little bit more faith in South Carolina's offense, because I would be interested to see Alabama having to respond to an offense that could present problems for them. But man, who was it that, I know he stopped wearing them, he's wearing contact lenses now, but there was someone on Twitter that just said, Lenora Sellers is Joe Milton with goggles, and I can't unsee that image. Now, I don't think he's got a good arm, but he doesn't have the Milton arm. The Milton arm is a different type of thing.
Yeah, that's my problem with this game, is I don't think South Carolina is the team to exploit the weaknesses that have been exposed in Alabama's defense. Because there are a lot of questions now about Alabama coming out of that Vanderbilt game, but I really think this is the ultimate get-right spot for the Crimson Tide, because as we saw in the South Carolina-Ole Miss game last week, I mean, that South Carolina offense, as we've kind of known all year, they just don't have a pulse. So unless they can wreak havoc on you with their defensive front and make game-changing beamer ball type of plays and special teams, they just really don't have a chance. And I don't see Alabama being vulnerable enough offensively to where they're going to struggle to score against South Carolina. And you go back to really the only time all season when South Carolina's looked impressive was in their win over Kentucky. And as we talked about off the air, man, like that Kentucky offense is just garbage. And so Alabama's offense, if I know one thing, I know it's not garbage. So no. I've got Alabama winning and covering.
Yeah. And then I do think, I guess maybe it is interesting from this point. If they struggle with South Carolina, maybe last week wasn't a fluke. Maybe the fluke was what they did in the first 20 minutes against Georgia, which they looked invincible.
Well, that's what I keep coming back to, is that first 20 minutes against Georgia. That's the version of Alabama that we know exists. And now that we know that version of Alabama exists, it's hard for me to get that out of my mind when I'm doing my rankings and projecting out, like, all right, who's actually still going to make the playoff? And it's like, man, Alabama showed us what they can be. And like, all right, like Vanderbilt did what it did. Like they won the game straight up. Diego Pavia was unreal. Like, I don't think that Alabama's loss to Vanderbilt, in my mind, in any way, disqualifies them from reaching all the goals that they thought they had at the beginning of the year.
No, I think what we're going to see is maybe one or two teams get out of this thing unscathed. But this is what I just kept coming back to. When Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois, the immediate reaction of done. I was like, guys, there's so much football left. And I was just convinced that a lot of teams that weren't used to taking L's were going to take some L's this year. And so far, we've kind of seen that. So, again, that's why we play the season. We'll see if people separate. All right, let's get to the 2:30 window. So we got Red River. We got Red River at 2:30. We got Penn State at USC. We also have Stanford, Notre Dame. Until Stanford, if they're going to do what they did at quarterback last week, like, get that off the TV. Like, I don't need to see that. That was disgusting. Cal at Pitt. I mean,
undefeated Pitt, Jeffrey.
That is, and Holstein playing some pretty good football. Shout outs to him. Then we've also got Purdue, who might be the worst Power 5 team, at Illinois. We also have Louisville, UVA, Cincinnati at UCF. UCF coming off a 2-game losing streak. And then we also have, at this window, Memphis and South Florida. Okay, so we'll get into the other games, but this is what I do think is interesting. We still, as of this moment, I don't have Twitter right in front of me, but Cobb's on alert as well. We've not seen any update, correct?
Not that I've seen.
So as of this moment in time, that game is still scheduled for 2:30 on Saturday in Tampa, 2:30 Central, so 3:30 Eastern. Jonah Dillon of the Commercial Appeal has pointed out on Twitter that the Tampa Bay Lightning were also scheduled to play at home on Saturday night. They've already canceled that game. I'm not saying like that's a nothing burger. I do think it's fair to point out the NHL has an 82-game season, and we're not even a week into their schedule. It's a lot easier for them to go, we're gonna postpone this game, figure out a date later, and play it then, versus two teams in college football were nearly halfway through the season, and they don't have a date that makes sense for them to just reschedule. So yeah. I'm not saying it's like a nothing burger, but it's like I just think it's a lot easier for the Lightning to do that and maybe kind of take the PR win than it is for this set of circumstances.
Yeah, but that NHL game is not until Sunday, and they've already made a decision. We're talking about a game that's supposed to be played in roughly 48 hours. How have you not, if you're going to cancel it or postpone it or do whatever, how have you not already made that decision? The hurricane has passed. It's on its way, you know, out of the area. Like, you should know by now if you're going to cancel that game. And also, if you really were interested in canceling it or postponing it or moving it or whatever, you could have made that decision on Monday, because we all saw the forecast.
Yeah, and that's why I've always just said, like, even when the discussion started on Monday, I was like, all right, I'm not saying it's like 100% to 0%, but if we have to point the finger, it's like I'm pointing the finger at South Florida. Like,
if you're Memphis, like, you got to leave in, I mean, I'm assuming they're leaving relatively early.
They're scheduled to leave tomorrow.
Yeah, so you got to know something ASAP.
Is the Tampa airport open?
Surely you could get a charter flight in there, right?
I don't know. Is there a difference between commercial? Like, obviously, like, are the runways open? Like, that's what I've never known. Like, is FedEx still flying out of Tampa? Is UPS still flying out of Tampa? Like, I can understand where commercial traffic is stopped, but, like, can you just land?
Well, if FedEx is flying, you know Memphis is good.
I don't know if they're flying to Tampa. That's the other problem.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a crappy situation for Memphis that there's not been anything definitively stated about. You know, it's all like, well, last we've heard, it's still on. Like, you would think there would be some sort of definitive messaging, if for nothing else, for the fans who are considering attending this game in South Florida. I mean, obviously, they got way more things to worry about right now than whether or not they're going to a football game on Saturday afternoon. But you would think South Florida would want to put out some messaging letting people know, hey, here's the situation. And they really need to do that sooner rather than later, because Memphis is supposed to be traveling down there, and you don't want to end up in a situation where you're delaying your flight or trying to get in late tomorrow night or whatever it is. So if you're Silverfield, if you're Memphis, you're like, all right, like, what's going on here? We need an answer.
All right, and then let's get to the nightcap before we talk some Grizzlies, because I know you and I are both excited to talk some Grizzlies with Eric. I mean, this is what we've been waiting for. Like, this slate is what we've been waiting for all season, and you and I talked about last week. It's like, last week are the weeks where you look at it and you're like, all right, the schedule doesn't look great, but we've seen the sport enough to know that, like, hang on, there could be something, and last weekend absolutely delivered. But we start with Florida-Tennessee. What does Tennessee look like getting off the mat? There's the question of, does Tennessee really have Florida heebie-jeebies? I looked it up. I think at home, 1-9 since 1995 against the spread as a home favorite against the Gators. I'm of the opinion, and I could be proven wrong, I think this is a nice spot for Tennessee. I think Tennessee's in a similar spot that Ole Miss was in last week, the key difference being Tennessee gets to do it at home. I know Nico wasn't great last week, other than pulling a Milton on the last play of the game. I also didn't think he was as bad, maybe, as the perception was. I didn't feel like he was getting a ton of help. And really, to me, the bigger issue was, like, I didn't feel like Tennessee consistently ran the football. But if you look at the indicators for Tennessee's success on offense, it's usually, do they get the drive started? That first down. Like, they're very dependent on that. Florida is 117th in the nation at down set conversion rate. So essentially drive starters. It's allowing drive starters. Tennessee is very dependent on getting the running game going so they can take the play action, big shots. Florida has not been good at stopping the run. Like, to me, this is the other thing I've been thinking about, and I don't want to overdo it, but like it's something I'm monitoring. Is maybe time of possession a stat again? Like, because I do feel like, I think it was probably, even at like the height of when people would look at, well, show me time of possession, I'll show you the winner. Like, that was probably overdone. But I think we might have also swung too far the other way of saying, like, time of possession doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, well, look at Kentucky versus Ole Miss. Kentucky, 39 minutes of possession. Look at Vanderbilt, Alabama. Vanderbilt, 42 minutes of possession. Look at Tennessee, Arkansas. Arkansas has multiple long clock-leading drives in the first half of that game. And if you're going to keep the ball away from an explosive offense like an Alabama, like a Tennessee, like an Ole Miss, that is a great recipe for success. So that then it comes down to, can Florida sustain drives against Tennessee?
And that's why like I do think this is a good spot for Tennessee, because Florida has not been very good at that as well. And then the highlights of the night. So, of course, we got Ohio State at Oregon. We have Ole Miss at LSU. We also have
Vandy and Kentucky.
Vandy, Kentucky. God, I wanted to take the cheese. I know it's a trap. I know it's a trap, but it's Diego getting double digits. It's like, I kind of believe my boy. I was like, oh, they'll be hungover. You think Diego Pavia hasn't played with a hangover before? Like, you know, come on. Like, that's how I feel. All right, let's go with Oregon, Ohio State, then we'll get into LSU, Ole Miss quickly, and then we'll get to Eric. I think the thing that is interesting to me, neither team has really been tested. I am very curious of, has Oregon's offensive line struggles that they've shown throughout the year at various times, are those going to be exploited by Ohio State? And then I think the question on the flip side of it for me, while Gabriel had two bad picks last week, like red zone picks or maybe like goal to go picks, he still played pretty well for them. Howard has looked fine. You know what I mean? Like, Will Howard looks like Will Howard. Can Will Howard go into a game, a big game on the road, and come away the victor? Like that to me, that those are the two matchups that I'm most fascinated by.
Yeah, it's going to be an environment unlike anything Ohio State has encountered. This is Oregon's arrival moment. Like, hey, we are one of the big dogs now in college football, without a doubt. Like, we're in the Big Ten. We're hosting Ohio State. The home field advantage factor is going to be significant in Oregon's favor here. But I do have those same questions about Oregon's offense actually facing a good defense for the first time this season. I mean, Oregon's passing game has been really hollow, a lot of empty calories, not a whole lot of flash from those receivers. And then you flip the equation and it's like Jeremiah Smith, Emeka Egbuka, and then you look at the backs, Henderson, Judkins. Like, I just think Ohio State has more weapons, which they should. I mean, they went all in this year. And so, yeah, from an on-field, just like stripping away the home field advantage, Ohio State wins this game in my mind. But does Will Howard get rattled? I mean, that's a legitimate concern for me, because he's never been more than just a guy in his career. And now I think to go on the road and beat a top three team, you got to be more than just a guy. And I don't know if he can do that.
Yeah, and then like, have both of these teams been holding stuff back? I mean, Howard's run a little bit, but he's not run anywhere near like what we used to see Kansas State run him. Is Chip Kelly going to empty the clip and say, like, this is the game? And so, you know, is Ohio State going to do what Michigan largely did last year, where they're just extremely vanilla in all these games, and they have two games that matter, this being one of them, and they unload the clip? All right, then with Ole Miss, LSU, this will be the third straight conference game for Ole Miss, seventh straight week, although the first four, it's remains to be seen how taxing those first four games were. What I'm interested about here is that I still have secondary questions about Ole Miss, but they've not really played anyone that's been able to test them. Like, Vandegrift hits the big pass, but like for the most part, he was like, I think before that he was like 205 yards. Like, it wasn't a bad performance. Like, I thought he was efficient. Like, he kept the chains going. I thought he did more damage with his legs, kind of keeping drives going. But I am curious to know if Ole Miss's defense is as good as it has looked at times, or if they've just not played anyone with a pulse on offense, because this is by far going to be the best offensive line that they'll have seen all year. And I suspect with that secondary, they will be tested by Nussmeier and the receivers. And then on the flip side, if you're LSU, are you going to be able to do what has frustrated Ole Miss under Kiffin, which is largely hold the ball from them, be efficient, have those long drives that we were just talking about? Or is everyone just going to say, like, let's just screw it, let's get in the liquor cabinet, let's just get this thing drunk, let's have another 55, 48, 55, 51, whatever. Like, just screw it, like, let's have a party. Like, there's so many ways this game can go, in my opinion.
Neither team has really proven they can run the football against a good opponent.
At all.
Ole Miss racks up run yards against bad teams, but then can't run the ball the last couple weeks against SEC teams. LSU has struggled with the run all season, so you're going to have Jackson Dart slinging it. You're going to have Garrett Nussmeier slinging it. I think it's more likely to be the latter of your scenarios. I don't know that it'll be 55-49, but Death Valley at night with these two teams, yeah, it's going to get weird, and there's probably going to be some interceptions. There's probably going to be... This one might be decided by who throws the fewest picks, to be honest, because I think you're going to see with the type of weapons that are on the perimeter, I think you're going to see both secondaries struggle in this game.
Yeah, the health of Trey Harris obviously would be a huge part of it. He comes away gimpy. He has a calf, a.k.a. pre-Achilles. Like, that's a huge storyline. I mean, I don't know. It should be a fun, fun night of football. All right, let's get into the Grizzlies. They will host the Charlotte Hornets tonight. You can hear the game with Eric Hastein. He joins us next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join MIDI.com.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Eric Hasenstein is the Memphis Grizzlies radio network play-by-play announcer. The Memphis Grizzlies first preseason home opener tonight. Charlotte Hornets, 7 p.m. pregame at 6:30 with Eric. You can watch tonight on Bally Sports Southeast. Kind enough to join us now. Eric, I'd mentioned it at the top of the broadcast, but I got to give you credit. There was no easing into form. We got the highlights. We got the call from Monday night. You were ready to roll, my man. I was just in awe of, like, because I always know that first game of the year for me, it's always, you know what you're doing, but you're kind of a step slow. I did not feel like that. You were ready to hit the ground running.
Well, you're far too kind to say that, but yeah, it was fun, man. It was fun to get back doing what we love to do, and you know, having Michael there helped, and it was, it didn't hurt that it was a chance to see the core group minus Jaren out there together, and have some excitement about seeing them play on the court again. So, like, Ja, Marcus Smart, Desmond Bane, your first look at Zach Edey. But, yeah, man, it's I don't know. I guess after this many years, you just kind of hit the ground and go. I'd be lying if I didn't say I was kind of thinking about it all day and how am I going to – get into form, but I'm very appreciative you said that.
All right, Eric, so we get the Grizzlies back in action, assuming Ja Morant won't be a part of that. What does the Grizzlies offense look like in a scenario, in a situation where there is no Ja? I mean, is Scottie Pippen going to get some extensive run with the ones, or is this a situation where Marcus Smart and Desmond Bane are kind of going to be running the show?
Well, I think now this is the time to try everything, to try and see what really works, how the offense flows. It's a more aggressive style. It's an attacking style. You saw the turnover numbers probably be a little higher than you'd like, obviously, and that's pretty common in your first preseason game, especially when you have guys that haven't played a lot together. They got caught in that second quarter, I thought, getting into the lane, leaving their feet, and not exactly sure where they were going to go with the basketball, but that'll clean up. That's relatively easy to fix. So Scotty will see that time. He needs that time. You know, he's worked very hard to get to where he's at, but this guy, Scotty wasn't just a pure point guard all growing up. He was a scorer, and he could put the ball in the bucket. So now you got to learn how to facilitate an offense, and they've worked with Desmond Bane. They've worked with Luke Kennard. Marcus Smart's obviously done it in the past. I think you've got to try different looks and different combinations, and I think it's a safe assumption we won't see Ja much, if at all, moving forward this preseason, which is smart. He just kind of landed on his ankle wrong. It didn't look serious. He came back out, and then when he landed on the dunk, it kind of flared up again, and so you just play on the side of caution. You don't. These next four games, truthfully, are to get some rhythm, some chemistry, but they don't matter. They really don't. You go out tonight and shoot 32%, you figure out why the shots weren't falling, whether it was good looks, bad looks, whatever, and you just work on it in practice. I like the way they set up the schedule, where they played a game, they wanted to correct some things. Now they're going to play three in the rhythm of what the regular season will look like, where you're playing every other night a lot of times. And then after that game Monday in Indianapolis, you have 3 days to work on things before the Miami game, which is your final tune-up. And then you have the break before you go to Utah and play the Jazz on opening night 2 weeks from yesterday. So I think, David, to answer your question, is they're gonna put the ball in a lot of guys' hands. I mean, you're going to take a look at Yuki Kawamura tonight, too, who came in and played really well. Was not fearful of anything. I mean, when he walks out on the court, you're like, who is this dude? And then you see him go at anybody. He went at the 7'5 kid for the Mavericks that played for a season at Ole Miss after playing at Western Kentucky. And I'm blanking on
Sharp,
his name.
Sharp, what's it? Something.
Yeah, Jamarion Sharp. Yeah. Yeah, Jamarion Sharp, who led the nation in block shots a couple of years ago. But he challenged him, and I was like, that's brazen since he's almost 2 feet taller than you and not an ounce of fear. Drew a foul, and I like that. You're going to look at some of those guys because they do need to get a look at a couple of the G League guys, because what will happen is what they've done in years past. They'll take a look at a couple of them. They'll waive them. They'll be picked up by the Hustle. They'll pick up a couple more. Then they do that plan, or, you know, rule B or whatever it is type thing, and they can pick those guys up for the Hustle group that can fit what they're doing. And obviously that paid dividends for them last year of, yeah, they lost a lot of games, but they weren't just blown out. They had guys that knew the system because they were playing, you know, 5 miles down the road. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting tonight. It'll be interesting to see how the minutes are managed, who gets nights off, who doesn't. But with Jaren out, now Ja out, and TG and Vince out, you're like, okay, let's make sure nobody else finds.
Oh, no. Did we lose him? Oh, there he is. Okay. We thought you lost you there for a second. Eric, no. I wanted to ask you this. I believe Harrington noted, if the Grizzlies would have maintained, if they maintained the pace that they played with on Monday, they would lead the league in pace. Do you think that that's mm-hmm. going to be the regular occurrence, or do you think that was more something they're working on, something that they can have as, you know, more of like an option rather than that's going to be the essentially the way that they play? How do you kind of view what we're watching in the preseason versus what we'll see, you know, throughout the regular season?
I think it's going to be probably more of the regular. I thought Taylor Jenkins had a great quote before after practice when he said, hey, pace is judged by numbers for the analytical guys, basically, but we're trying to make it a frame of mind. We want to play aggressive. We want to play fast. We want to move. Now, with that said, when you have guys that haven't been doing that as much, and a lot like Indiana last year, remember the Pacers kind of started slowly.
Yeah.
They had picked up the pace. Then all of a sudden, you're watching this team score 135 and 130 and 129 in regulation. You're going like, what is going on? Like, what is happening here? And so I think they're trying to get where that becomes the norm, not the one-off, and we're trying to figure things out. So I think they're going to play fast this year. I think they feel like if they stay healthy and they play fast, teams are going to have a hard time keeping up with them. They've got depth with guys they trust. I think when you look at the roster, when fully healthy, they go 11, 12 deep. You play some extra guys, a handful of minutes here or there, and give guys a little more time on the bench. And, you know, instead of going 8 minutes and you get into groove, you go 7 minutes and you go all out, or 6 minutes and you go all out. And when you're ready to come back in, you go that way. I think that's going to be more the norm. And where it's going to be interesting to me is this team has been good on the defensive end. Even last year when they were not a high win percentage team, their defense wasn't awful. And they had a lot of young guys that hadn't been at this level learning how to play. The team chemistry on defense was solid. Can they maintain that with a new coach behind the defense this year and a new coach in front of the offense, and with the offense playing fast, do the legs, you know, show that at times defensively? Do you get tired? Do you give up easy baskets when in the past you haven't? Can you recover from that? This looked a little more to me like a couple of years ago when we would see this team get to a lead and then inevitably your opponent makes a run, yet after a basket you grab the ball and you go the other way and get a basket real quick. It's demoralizing. We were talking about that on the broadcast. 2 years ago, you'd see teams down 7 or 8. They'd make a couple buckets. You start feeling good about yourself. You're in your home building as the opponent of the Grizzlies. Grizzlies are on the road. You're getting the crowd fired up. You make a three. You kind of pseudo-celebrate. Next thing you know, you're seeing guys run right by you, get a basket, and you're like, what just happened? We thought we just grabbed momentum, and you just take it right back. I think they're trying to get back to more of that and trying to get baskets when you're catching teams maybe not ready to get back, maybe not, you know, hustling back like coaches would hope they should. I mean, they're humans. They're going to have those moments in a 48-minute game. I think as fans, we sometimes get the delusion, like, if you play 48 minutes, it should be 48 minutes of all-out, everything you got, energy, and that's just not possible. I mean, it just really isn't, because you're going to have times where you get tired, where your focus wavers just for a split second, and if you can capitalize on...
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.